You're listening to Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow. On Monday, President Obama signed an executive order to the cheers of scientists to tear down tight restrictions on embryonic stem cell research in the U.S., restrictions President Bush had put into place nearly 8 years ago, and this is what the president had to say.
Today, with the executive order I am about to sign, we will bring the change that so many scientists and researchers, doctors and innovators, patients and loved ones have hoped for and fought for these past 8 years. We will lift the ban on federal funding for promising embryonic stem cell research.
He also went on to talk about something possibly even more important for the future of science.
I'm also signing a presidential memorandum directing the head of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy to develop a strategy for restoring scientific integrity to government decision-making.
My next guest was on stage with the president as he signed the order, and he's here to talk about that and other issues where science and politics mix. So let me introduce him now. Peter Agre is the president of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. He's also the winner of the 2003 Nobel Prize in Chemistry and director of the Malaria Research Institute in the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health in Baltimore, and he joins us from WYPR there. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you, Ira. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
You're welcome. What was it like to be up there on stage with
the
president?
I feel like I'm a cadre. I just turned 60. I felt like I've been through a lot of interesting experiences, but that was special.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt a wave of electricity in the air to be standing beside President Obama at this historic occasion. It was terrific.
There were a whole bunch of scientists up there. I haven't seen that in a while.
Well, it was probably plenty more that would like to have been up there. This was a very special time.
Mm-hmm. And what's your opinion of the signing of the ceremony and the impact of it?
Well, the ban placed on stem cell funding for stem cell research by President Bush, in my view, was a line drawn in the sand, which was not based on scientific reasons. So we've erased that line now, and the scientists will be able to receive federal funding to do the work they so badly want to do. And, of course, the hard part is what the scientists now must do in the laboratories, because there's no guarantee of success in science. But at least access to the funding can now be achieved. And this is something that the great majority of Americans wanted all along.
All right. I want to bring another gentleman on, another scientist to join us. Evan Snyder is professor and director of the program in stem cell and regenerative biology at the Burnham Institute for Medical Research in La Jolla. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Snyder. It's been a while.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Ira.
I wanted to get your impression on how soon are we actually going to see practical changes in the stem cell research laboratories?
Well, I think we're already, as of Monday, starting to see very practical changes. So in three particular areas. One, we're simply now able to be less wasteful in the use of our funds. As you know, prior to Monday, we had to actually duplicate reagents, equipment, and things of that sort. So one, we'll be less wasteful. That's very practical.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, we can begin actually designing our experiments based on logic and data as opposed to ideology or wondering what kind of grant would be acceptable to NIH. And then thirdly, we can finally bring to bear the power of the federal government, particularly NIH, to this very important field. So, for example, our institution has huge NIH-funded drug discovery mechanisms and equipment. We have an Environmental Health Sciences Center and things of that sort, all of which were somewhat excluded from being able to be applied to the broad range of human stem cells. Now we can start doing that.
Mm-hmm. So you think there's a sea change going on?
I think there is an important sea change. In science throughout, I think we finally feel like we have an administration that values data, logic, science, as opposed to being guided by ideology or political expedience.
Mm-hmm. I understand that during the ban on the use of federal funding, there were things like people felt like they had to separate the paper clips, the pencils, things like that in the laboratory just so they wouldn't mix the two.
Absolutely.
It
got down to that level of silliness.
Mm-hmm. But there were still scientists at NIH during those years. Did they work with you at all on any of your projects?
Well, the scientists that worked in the intramural labs at NIH had to be exceedingly careful. In fact, I had a friend and colleague who's no longer at NIH because he was collaborating with some individuals, some investigators who were working on a broad range of stem cells, some of which were unapproved, and he had to take his name off of a paper simply because they were using RNA and DNA from unapproved lines.
Wow. Dr. Agri, how do you get people excited about all this money that's flowing into basic research? And I was at NIH earlier in the week, and they were talking about how do we spend all this money? You know, we're not even sure what to do with billions of dollars we're going to be getting without promising any miracles. You know, we've had promises of cures for cancer over the years, and we're talking about that again. How do we not create false hopes?
Well, I think you raise an important point because scientists cannot guarantee the results. I think Dr. Snyder and others are working very diligently to generate the breakthroughs that may make differences in the treatment of patients. But again, science is always about the unknown. So I think the investment is important. It's a little unfortunate that our cycles of funding are boom followed by bust. The bust era comes along when young scientists are unable to get funding, unable to get jobs, and they end up leaving science forever. So I think this stimulus package will have a nice bolus of funding for science, but that won't take care of science in the long term. I think consistent support by the government has been good, but it could be better. And I think scientists having the opportunity to speak to the public through media like your program are very important to share the value, the hopes of science, but not to oversell those hopes.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. We're talking about science and science research in the new administration. Evan Snyder, where do you think now that the new funding that's coming through, where will it show up first and in what kinds of research?
I actually think that I agree with Dr. Agri that the greatest obstacle is still the biology itself, and there's still so much fundamental biology about stem cells and plasticity and pluripotence that I suspect that some of the initial funding, surprisingly, will go into understanding the fundamental mechanisms of what makes a cell behave the way we would like it to or the way it does, both in disease and in health, and how to harness that for therapy. So I think we're going to see some fundamental breakthroughs in the basic biology of stem cells.
Do you think that the red states are going to be as receptive to the new funding as the blue states?
I don't think so. I think we've already seen some of the states, for example, Georgia, trying to establish state rules that that they would hope would preempt the Obama executive order. So I think this is not going to be embraced by all states.
Dr. Agri,
I would like to take issue with that. I don't think we should think in terms of states as being monolithic bodies. I've visited a number of universities throughout the South, and I found exciting science ongoing at the University of Mississippi and Jackson Medical Center. I have some of the best biologists in the country. The University of Alabama is a top institution, Emory University, University of North Carolina. So I think the political kind of label a state carries is probably not a good index in terms of the scientific reception. And I think this is actually an excellent way to stimulate the economies throughout the country by investing in science everywhere. One of the points I made when I was a candidate to become president of the AAAS is to represent science in the whole country throughout the heartland of America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I did not want to imply at all that in these states that there weren't excellent scientists that are going to, in every state, red or blue, that are going to really make astounding advances. I think I feel quite fortunate to be in a state like California that actually embraces and supports us, and I think some other scientists actually have some obstacles that are unfair that should be placed in front of them.
Dr. Snyder, do you think that this is going to hurt those states that have been trying to get their own laboratories going? Maybe the states say, well, we don't need to have state money anymore. We'll just go to federal coffers?
Well, you know, I think that now everybody has a fair shot at getting funded, particularly through the federal government, as long as they put together a meritorious and thoughtful grant. So I think this has helped level the playing field, and it really does not matter what state you actually live in. You should be able to get funding.
All right. Well, Dr. Snyder, thank you for taking time to be with us. And good
Thank
luck.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. Evan Snyder is a professor and director of the program in stem cell and regenerative biology at the Burnham Institute for Medical Research in La Jolla. We still have with us Peter Agria, the president of AAAS. Peter, scientists must be just pinching themselves now. I
think you're right. I think you're right. I think a lot of Americans are pinching themselves. But again, if you recall President Obama's words, he was very wise, and he said that while the breakthroughs may not occur in his life or his children's lives, we should still be working toward these ends. And it may well be that the progress, and progress is incremental, may lead to breakthroughs sometime in the future. We cannot ignore this line of research.
1-800-999-8255, talking with Peter Agria, the head of the AAAS. Can we use science better now also as a tool, as a diplomatic tool, to bridge between nations?
I think this is something that has great potential to bring people from different cultures together, to connect with scientists in countries which we may have recently viewed as being the members of the Axis of Evil. And I think this is an area of great promise. Activities being planned with the AAAS and other organizations to reach out to scientists in other countries. Because the scientists don't necessarily carry the dogma of the governments, but in fact, all throughout the Cold War, I think American and Soviet physicists maintained contact, and for the better.
You've mentioned getting a D in high school chemistry. Whoa.
Well, actually,
I feel like we're kinsmen now, because I got a C and a D in college chemistry, too. So.
Actually, I regret ever mentioning this, and it was not an act of inability. It was more an act of immaturity, being a little brash. And frankly, how could I irritate my father, a college chemistry professor, more than bombing his subject?
Well, I wish
I've played.
I'm sorry.
I've prayed for penance, and I hope I've recovered.
Well, you know, I wish I could plead that excuse. I just couldn't do chemistry. Yeah.
I think the only long-term damage to that was that my high school chemistry teacher probably aspirated his cornflakes when he heard the announcement of the Nobel Prize in 2003.
Well, it's really amazing the way the world works, isn't it? 1-800-989-8255. Laura in Denver. Hi, Laura.
Hi there.
Hi there.
How are you?
Hi.
So my question is, it's about the funding issue. If a lot of federal dollars are going into a lot of this research, my question is, what kind of guarantees are there that if there is a major breakthrough and it's patented by private corporations, what kind of return is there going to be for the taxpayer dollars? Or is all that, you know, the money that's made on that breakthrough just going to go back into the private corporations and their shareholders? Are there any kind of policy issues around that that are being discussed?
Dr. Agria, that's a good question.
Well,
especially,
I think, Lord,
yeah,
I think it is a very good question. And I think I take a somewhat different view of this. Oftentimes patents are for the protection to make sure that the agencies, the companies can, in fact, generate a product without being scooped overnight. They have, in fact, at times been used to prolong the excessive charges for medications, for example. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we have a very delicate balance. Without pharmaceutical manufacturers, there'll be no medicines. We in university laboratories can make discoveries, but we're dependent upon the private sector as well. So I think we work together, and it's always been that way. 1921, when Frederick Banting discovered insulin, it was not a practical invention. He couldn't use it until he met a young pharmaceutical chemist from Indianapolis named Eli Lilly. So patents are meant to protect intellectual information. On the other hand, it is really only useful when it's distributed to the public, and we have to be careful that they're not overused to gouge.
You're listening to Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow, talking with Dr. Peter Agria, Nobel Prize winner in chemistry and director of Malaria Research Institute at Johns Hopkins, president of the AAAS. Do you see organizations like the AAAS and other organizations as being instrumental in trying to direct or help the president and those in Washington figure out what's going on in science?
I think there are many scientific organizations. Each has a special role. The American Association for the Advancement of Science, AAAS, is a general science organization. It started before the Civil War and includes scientists from all different areas, ranging from astrophysics to medicine, to biology, to plant biology, to archaeology. So it's a voice for all branches of science. And I think we're there to serve the government when our expertise is asked, but we're also there to provide education for the public, to stimulate scientific activities in the best possible way.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-989-8255. What do you see as the biggest challenge then, now that science is, as the president says, being put back in its rightful place? What do you see its rightful place is?
Well, Ira, I think science has a place to provide information about reality. It is not a religious or a moral issue. It's simply the facts. Substances released by microorganisms can inhibit other microorganisms. We can make them use those to develop antibiotics. So science is basically a tool which is largely used for the betterment of society, and on rare occasions can be detrimental. The overuse of antibiotics in the development of livestock has mm-hmm. led to cheaper prices for bacon, but at the cost of methicillin-resistant staphylococci. Mm-hmm. So science is not always a guarantee that life will be better. I mean, science needs to be used very intelligently, and for that reason, I think the public needs to increase its science understanding. And I, my view of the biggest challenge we face is to educate the public, the non-scientists, and at the same time interest young people in science. Science is an exciting career. It's not a charity. We do this because we love it, and we feel it's for the betterment of society.
Mm-hmm. And I only have less than a minute, so I'll wait for the question. But I want to come back and talk with Dr. Peter Agri about things like Congress people. You know, do we have enough Congress people in science and who understand science in Washington? How do we improve? You touched about it a bit, Dr. Agri. How do we improve science education? What about your own kids? I find my kids. I do science for a living. I'm not a scientist. Are they interested in talking about science? No way. We'll find out. I'll ask you about your kids and whether you know. But you have found the best way to talk to kids about science. We'll get into that. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Also, at SciFry if you're Twittering. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. I'm Ira Flatto. This is Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatto, talking with Dr. Peter Agri, president of the AAAS. Just have a few more minutes to chat. But I want to talk about science education, and kids. You mentioned about the influence your father had and what your childishness was with him. But when I ask scientists about who influenced them, a lot of them will say a teacher did somewhere along the line. Was that true in your case?
Yes, I think that the teachers we had were amongst the most generous individuals. I keep in touch with teachers from high school and middle school. These were remarkable individuals. On the other hand, in my case, I have to say it was my family that got me really interested in science, and some of Father's friends who were really influential scientists were role models and heroes.
But that seems to be what's needed then. There's someone who has to take you as a kid aside and show some real interest rather than being just another face in the crowd, it appears to me.
I think science is not something that's easily absorbed from textbooks. I think it is a human demonstrating some interesting physical or chemical property, and a youngster is there to perceive it.
Mm-hmm. And it seems that... go ahead. I'm sorry.
I had come home from the laboratory, though, some weeks, and in the evening, tired out, and my kids all, we four children, they all knew I was a scientist. But they'd rush up to tell me what they saw on the television, what Bill Nye, a real scientist, did. I've met Bill Nye. He really is great.
He does have that bow tie attraction. He's a great guy. I know Bill also. So what's your recommendation then, and how to get kids? You know, they as Bill Nye will tell you, they all start out as scientists. Kids start out as natural scientists.
And you know, that's happens. Absolutely That's absolutely right. Our daughter Claire taught in Italy for a year following college before grad school, and she had a science club. This is in Italy, a private school, but the boys wanted to play soccer. But once they saw that the science club was about magnifying glasses, turning light into heat, electrical circuits, she'd have to make time to play soccer. It was so much fun. And obviously, both activities are important. I think kids are inherently curious, and if we can maintain that curiosity, it would be great. Now, they won't all become scientists. On the other hand, I think there's an important understanding of science, which every mm-hmm. citizen should have.
Mm-hmm. I also think that we have a president who, you know, is considered to be really cool. You know, he plays basketball, he does things like that. Maybe if he shows up at a science fair or something, that coolness wouldn't that be great?
Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice if he came to the AAAS meeting next year?
A free plug for the AAAS, you know, or even, you know, the vice president, who's not such a cool guy, of course. But vice presidents used to go to these science fairs and festivals. They don't, you know, politicians don't seem to. Well, politicians are not held in high esteem these days, but maybe that is changing a bit in Washington.
Well, with all due respect to Vice President Biden, I think Sasha and Malia, they're our target, young people of America. They need to see how much fun science is. And the AAAS, at their annual meeting next year in San Diego, will have a wonderful program for young people to have hands-on science, because mm-hmm. I think that really mm-hmm. shows them the potential and the fun of science.
We're going to be talking a little bit about physicists and scientists on Wall Street. Do you think they're now going to be staying home in the laboratories a bit more rather than flocking to the riches of Wall Street?
Well, Wall Street's a very special place. Things are traded and fortunes can be made, or as we see now, can easily be lost. But science is something else. I think most scientists are not looking for financial riches. If we can take home enough to be comfortable with our families, the real rewards are intellectual. And as a basic scientist, my children all knew growing up that our family vacation would be in a tent. But, you know, we had some great vacations. We visited all the national parks. Finally gave them a chance. Now, which national park do you want to visit next year? And they said, Disney World.
Well, you know, if the most valuable player of the Super Bowl can go, then why not a Nobel Prize winner?
Well, we went to the Everglades, then we visited Disney World, and we had a great time.
Well, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with us today, Dr. Augury.
It's been so much fun to be with you, Ira.
And good luck.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Peter Augury is president of the AAAS, that's the American Association for the Advancement of Science, also winner of the 2003 Nobel Prize in Chemistry. Got a D in chemistry. See, it can work. And director of the Malaria Research Institute at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health in Baltimore.